Welcome to Ideas and Issues. I'm Hugh LaFollette, professor of philosophy at East Tennessee State University. My guest this morning is Douglas Amy from the Department of Politics at Mount Holyoke College, and her topic is proportional representation. Douglas, glad to have you with us on the show.
It's good to be here.
The topic is proportional representation, but the current voting system that we practice in this country, you label or describe as a plurality voting system. Could you talk a little bit about the system we use and why you call it a plurality system?
Well, it's a system that I think we're all very used to, and it's one we grew up with. Electing people in single-member districts, that is, we elect people one at a time to a state legislature or a Senate or something, a city council. And the winner of that election in the single-member district is the one who gets the most votes. Often, if it's a two-way race, it's the person that gets the majority of votes. But sometimes if there's, let's say, three candidates, it's simply the candidate that gets the most votes. And that's what you mean by plurality, the candidate that gets the most votes.
Okay, so it is a system that we're all accustomed to, and in fact probably so accustomed to it that we assume that that's clearly the best system. But as far as you're concerned, there are a number of problems with this system. Maybe it'd be helpful if you just briefly mention a number of the problems, then we could go back and discuss several of them in more detail.
Okay. I think the main problem, and the one that one of the reasons why a lot of people are interested in proportional representation, or more people are these days, is that our particular system often is very unrepresentative. That, for example, a lot of people will waste their votes. They'll go in and vote for somebody, and that person won't win, and therefore they don't win any representation. Also, a single-member district, a plurality system, tends to really cut down on the variety of choices that people have at the polls, and so we tend to only have Republicans and Democrats to choose from. Another problem is that we tend to have very low turnout in this kind of system, for reasons I can talk about later. It also encourages gerrymandering as well. Something that people have been concerned about with a lot lately is it tends to underrepresent racial and ethnic minorities.
Okay, let's go back and look at those in a bit more detail. One of the first ones you mentioned was that the plurality system, within the plurality voting system, people often waste their votes. What do you mean? I mean, people are still able to vote, correct?
Right. Everyone has the right to vote in the system. But we don't really have the right to have an effective vote, that is, a vote that actually elects someone. And I think we're really all familiar with this problem. If you're, you know, a Republican that lives in a predominantly Democratic district, and let's say you're trying to elect somebody to the U.S. House, chances are if you vote for your candidate, you're not going to win. And that's what we call in political science a wasted vote. It's a vote, I mean, in some senses, you might well as not have voted anyway, because if you go out and vote, you're still not going to win any particular kind of representation. So your views are not going to be represented by anyone.
Okay, so it's wasted in the sense that it within certain districts anyway, it's never effective.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. One of the second things you mentioned was that there were usually very few choices. Now, sometimes, of course, there are a number of names in the ballot, so I assume you're claiming not just that there aren't very many choices, but there aren't very many real choices.
Right. What happens in a plurality system is that there's only a few parties that really have any viable chance of electing someone, and those are usually the two major parties. Because you have to get usually a majority or at least a plurality of the vote. And what that means is that if you're interested in a third-party candidate, let's say you're interested in Ross Perot's Reform Party, the chances are, or some other third party, the chances are if you vote for that candidate, they might get 10% of the vote or 20% or even 30% of the vote. But that's not nearly going to be enough to get elected. So it's a very strange situation, because Americans are saying that they want to see more and more choices at the poll. I think one of the recent surveys showed that two-thirds of Americans said they wanted to see more parties running for office, other parties challenging the Republicans and Democrats. And the problem with our particular system is, again, it's a wasted vote to vote for one of those third-party candidates. And in fact, it actually can be worse than that. If you vote for one of those candidates, you could actually help the candidate you least want get elected. So it really discourages people from supporting third-party candidates and really makes it more or less impossible for those candidates to be elected. And then as a result, the legislatures don't tend to represent the variety of political opinion that we really have in the United States.
Okay, now one point that I don't believe you mentioned a moment ago, but I think springs from the two considerations you've just mentioned, is it's an idea that you discuss in your book on this topic, is that the process of only having two parties in a majoritarian system tends to lead the parties to put forward mediocre candidates. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure I would say mediocre so much. I think what it does, though, it tends to encourage candidates who tend not to be very forthcoming with their particular positions on difficult issues. And that's because if you're running and you're trying to get a majority of the vote, it's very dangerous to take a very strong position on a very controversial issue, let's say like abortion. Because if you take a strong issue in favor of abortion, then you're going to alienate a lot of people who are on the other side, and vice versa. And if you keep doing that and expressing yourself and saying, well, I really stand here, and I stand for this, and I stand for that, it's difficult to put together that majority that you need to win. So what you see candidates doing a lot is hedging and kind of saying, well, you know, I sort of see both sides of this issue, and more often just trying to ignore those issues in their campaign because they're afraid of offending people. That's really, I think, the main problem.
Okay, well, I apologize if I chose the inappropriate term there in describing it. The last thing which you did mention, which also seems to me to spring from the other considerations you mentioned, is that there's often a very low voter turnout. Maybe you could give us some statistics there which would on voter turnout.
Well, single-member district systems, these plurality system districts, tend to have dramatically lower turnout. In the United States, in a good year, that is a year where we have a presidential election and we have high turnout, you know, we're lucky if we get 50% or a little over 50% of the people to turn out to vote. And in off-year elections, it can be dramatically lower. It might only be, you know, 40% or 38% or something like that. In countries that use proportional representation, though, you see very high levels of turnout, often 80%, 85%, and even 90% turnout. And often that is because it does offer a variety of alternatives, so people can go out and see a variety of parties and realize that they can vote for those parties and those parties can get elected. So it's easier for people to get excited about who they're voting for, and also it has much fewer wasted votes, so your chances of actually electing someone is much higher. So those are all kind of incentives which encourage people to get out and vote in those kinds of systems, whereas people, if they can't find anybody in the ballot that looks very good to them under our system, or if they realize, well, I could vote for my candidate, but in fact that person has no chance of winning, no, that's not really much of an incentive to go out to vote.
Okay, and I take it the issue is not just a matter of voting either, but it's overall participation in the political system is going to be lower in a plurality voting system.
Right. Well, I think it's also has to do with whether people see the system as being open to participation. And again, if you're one of those people that don't really feel comfortable calling themselves a Republican or a Democrat, this is really a system that I think is very unwelcoming to you. And it's sort of saying that we don't need your participation because you're not, you're not part of the majority in your district.
Okay. You've talked now about some of the drawbacks of the plurality system, and again, for most of us, that's the only system we've known. Could you describe at least several of the proportional systems of proportional representation, and then we can talk about the perhaps the strengths and the weaknesses of each?
Okay. There are different kinds of proportional representation systems, but they all share two basic characteristics and two characteristics which differentiate them from our plurality election system. The first is that they all use multi-member districts. That is, instead of electing one person to a district, you might elect, say, five people or 10 people. So what you would do is you would combine, let's say, five single-member districts into one larger district where you would elect all five members at once. So that's one way that it's different. The second way that it's different from the way we usually do things is that it isn't winner take all. It isn't that the majority of the plurality gets all the representation. those seats that are at stake, let's say there's 10 seats in the district, are divided up according to the proportion of the vote that a particular party gets. So let's say you had an election in a PR election in a 10-member district where 40% of the vote was Republican, let's say 40% was Democrat, and 20% of the people voted for the Reform Party. Well, the Republicans would get, with that 40% of the vote, 4 out of those 10 seats. The Democrats would also get 4 out of the 10 seats. And then with their 20% of the vote, the Reform Party would get 2 out of those 10 seats. So that's the general idea. And that pretty much describes a system called party list proportional representation. And that's a very common system in Europe these days, where people basically go in and vote for a particular party, and the party has a slate of candidates. And then depending on the particular proportion of the vote that party receives, then that the appropriate number of candidates then is elected to office. So that's one kind of proportional representation. Another kind that has been used sometimes in this country and is currently used in several cities is called the single transferable vote. And that's actually a very different kind of system. It's not where you vote for a party, but you vote for particular candidates. It's the system that's used right now, for example, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the way that system works is that they have a 9-member city council, and all of the candidates run on the same ballot, and the voters go in, and they basically rank order their candidates, the ones they prefer. They put a 1 next to the candidate that they really like, their first choice, a 2 next to the second choice candidate, 3, 4, 5, and so on. Then what happens is all those first choice votes are tabulated. This is all done by a computer now. And any candidate that gets over a certain threshold, in this case in Cambridge it's 10% of the vote, any candidate that gets over 10% of the vote is elected. And then if there are seats still to be filled, then there's this transfer process that goes on. So, for example, the candidate that got the least number of votes, those ballots are transferred from the first choice that you put down to your second choice. And then after that transfer takes place, the ballots, again, all are counted, and if somebody gets over the 10% threshold, then that person's elected and so on. It sounds a little complicated, the counting part. But the point is that you don't need 50% of the vote or 51% to get elected, so you can have a variety of groups that are represented in the system. And also, your chances of wasting your votes is much less, because if you vote for a candidate that turns out really can't win, then your ballot is transferred to another candidate that does have a chance to win.
Okay. That's very helpful. What I'd like to do is to look at some objections and potential problems for systems of proportional representation. But before we do, I'd like to stop briefly for the benefit of any listeners who may have tuned in late. My guest on Ideas and Issues today is Douglas Amy in the Department of Politics at Mount Holyoke College, and we are discussing proportional representation. I'd like to mention maybe some of the objections that people might have to systems of proportional representation. For instance, one of the things that you identified as being a central characteristic of all systems of proportional representation are multi-member districts. Now, one of the things that people like about our current system is they feel as if they can have some kind of relationship with their representative, whether it be at the state level or the federal level. If you have multi-member districts, then presumably, unless you just greatly expand the size of the representative body, then the districts are going to be much larger than they currently are, and people might feel as if they don't have the kind of relationship, working relationship with the representative that they would like. Do you see this as a serious problem?
Well, I guess I don't, and for really one major reason, and that is that criticism presumes that today people do have a close relationship with their representatives in these smaller districts, and I think often that is not the case. And the main reason it's not the case is that often a lot of people in that district, maybe 40%, 45% of the people in that district, didn't vote for that particular representative, and in fact may object to the kinds of things that representative is doing. I mean, if you're a Democrat and your representative is a Republican, and that person's voting against everything that you hold dear, you probably don't feel very close to that particular representative, and you probably don't feel like it would make much difference if you went to talk to that person. They probably wouldn't be very open to hearing what you had to say. So I think that it's a mistake to assume that right now everybody does have this close relationship with their representative. The advantage, I think, in these larger districts is because they have more representatives, it means that everyone is going to have somebody that they elected, first of all, and that they can feel sort of politically close to. So, I mean, the classic example, again, would be a third-party supporter. Again, let's just take the Reform Party. In proportional representation system, the chances are if there's enough people in the district, you know, 10 or 12, 15%, they're going to be able to elect somebody from the Reform Party. So they would have somebody in that delegation from that district that they actually elected and they could relate to. So I think actually proportional representation would create a system where people would, more people would feel closer to their representatives.
Okay, that makes sense. I could imagine, though, another sort of criticism being made, in fact, partly stemming from just that observation. Obviously, a consequence of a system of proportional representation, and some people see it as the main benefit, is that you would have more parties being represented in the body, whatever it happened to be, whether it be the state legislature or the Congress. But that often means, or it may mean, that no one party will have a majority. I can imagine some people saying, well, isn't that going to be unstable? Is it going to make it difficult for the government to be effective if there's no majority body, no majority of opinion within the legislative body?
Right. And actually, that's a very common concern among people in the United States when they, because they're very concerned about issues of gridlock and, you know, can our legislatures really act effectively to address the kinds of problems that we have. But it turns out it's in practice, it's not really much of a problem. That what happens is, yes, you do have a greater variety of parties. Typically, instead of just two parties with one having a majority in the legislature, you might have three parties or four parties or five parties. And as you suggested, what tends to happen is instead of one party having a majority, it's a coalition of parties. So it might be two parties or three parties that come together because they have, you know, shared sort of political interests, and they form a coalition, and that turns out to be the majority. If you look at how the system has worked in other countries, what you see is that these coalitions tend to rule very effectively, that they often tend to be very stable coalitions. Either they tend to be usually center-left coalitions or center-right coalitions. And in fact, it turns out, as political scientists have found, that the record of these coalitions in passing legislation effectively has been much better, actually, than the U.S. Congress. So it turns out in practice that these coalitions are stable and they work very effectively to pass legislation and address problems.
Well, maybe that partly addresses another concern I can imagine someone having, that having proportional representation might encourage extremist groups because they say to themselves, gee, if we get enough votes if we can get 10% of the votes, then we can have a representative. So rather than trying to find some kind of consensus within a larger party, each party, each view goes off on its own. Does that encourage or promote extremism within the political process?
I think it actually doesn't. I mean, it does make it easier for fringe political parties to elect someone. I mean, it's obviously easier if you only need 10 or 20% of the vote to elect someone than if you need, you know, 45 or 50 or 51% of the vote. But again, if one looks at what's happened in practice in countries, and most other democracies use proportional representation, what you see is that they haven't been plagued by extremist groups. And that's for, I think, one main reason, and that is there is a threshold level over which a party must get a number or percentage of the votes in order to win representation. For example, in Cambridge, as I was discussing earlier, a party or a group has to get over 10% of the vote. Now, that might sound like a small percentage, but in fact, if you were a real extremist party, let's say like a fascist party or a neo-Nazi party or something like that, those parties only get a very tiny percentage of the vote, and so in the vast majority of cases, they would not be able to elect somebody in this kind of system. But let's take a worst-case scenario. Let's say, in fact, there was an extremist group that somehow did manage to elect someone. Let's say, you know, a racist group, you know, KKK representative or something. It seems to me that there's another concern that you have to take into account, and that is some people have argued that it's better to have those kind of people, you know, have a few representatives in the system than to block them out of the system. Because if you block those people out, that's going to increase political frustration and really encourage them to engage in, you know, other kinds of undesirable political activity. I mean, that's when people turn to violence. That's when people turn to bombing and so forth, when they feel like they don't have any voice, they don't have any representations, no one's listening to them. How do you get the word out? How do you get some attention while you engage in those kinds of, you know, undesirable political activities? And so some proponents of PR have argued, well, it's better to have some of those people in the system. There are only going to be a few of them anyway, and therefore, in a sense, give them a voice and give them a reason for participating in sort of the normal democratic institutions rather than trying to engage in these activities outside of the system.
Okay. All right, one last criticism I could imagine someone making, particularly in the party-less proportional system that you mentioned, which you said was an extremely common system. I could imagine someone being upset with the system because they would say it gives too much power to party leaders, not enough power to individual citizens.
Mm. Well, in practice, that doesn't tend to be the case. I think sometimes people